traveling to consciousness, exploring spiritual journeys to find answers in uncertainty.
Whew. How do you say your last name?
Conseil Sao. Do you really want to try that? Yeah,
Conseil Sao. Brandon Conseil Sao.
I don't think I've ever phonetically broken it down for someone like that, though.
That was easy.
Yeah.
Conseil Sao.
It's Brazilian, Portuguese.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, Portuguese. Not Brazilian,
makes
Portuguese.
Sense.
Yeah.
But Portugal, Portuguese.
Yeah.
Portuguese. The less cool Portuguese.
Yes, exactly.
Dude, so happy you're here. I'm excited to talk with you.
I'm honored to be here, man. Thank you for having me. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, dude, we got a lot to discuss. We've been discussing a lot already.
I know. I almost was like, maybe we should dial it back, but we're finally sitting, so.
I had to poke a couple times, but usually, I don't know. Sometimes with this type of stuff, it just happens and everything figures itself out. So the big reason I invited you on and the reason that I came across you is that you made a YouTube video talking about how you met Babaji. And so I guess I'm really curious in hearing this whole story of how you met Mahavatar Babaji. But for people who may not know, who in the world is Mahavatar Babaji?
Yeah, so Mahavatar Babaji is a part of, I mean, for what people know modernly, is a part of a lineage of gurus through made famous, I should say, or made known to the Western world through Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda, and the lineage of gurus in which he proclaimed, which was Mahavatar Babaji, Krishna, Jesus Christ, Lahiri Mahasaya, and Sri Yukteswarji, and then obviously Yogananda himself. So Babaji is an immortal. He's a soul that's been coming to this planet and doing spiritual work for, you know, thousands upon thousands, probably upon millions of years, you know? And so that's my understanding of who Babaji is. And some other texts allude that he's Shiva. So again, when I think of Babaji, I think of Shiva.
Okay. And so then what kind of trips me up, right, is he's been coming here for millions of years. So it's like he's had then many names, right? Is that because like you're saying that it's Shiva, it's Babaji. How does like the whole naming thing play into this? It's just the same energy?
Well, yeah. So energy is not created or destroyed. It just shifts forms. So if he, let's say he takes birth upon this planet, he's going to be given a name by his parents and whatnot. So, you know, and then he passes on, but he's immortal. So he never, like, your soul never actually dies. So if when he wakes up in whatever realm he's in at that point or takes birth again in some other form, he'll take on a different name. But at the end of the day, his soul is the same. It's the same with the Dash Avatar. You know Dash Avatar?
No, I don't.
So the 10 avatars of Vishnu.
Okay.
Right? So Vishnu is said to have manifested into 10 avatars onto this planet.
And an avatar being just like incarnation of God?
Incarnation of God, yeah. And specifically Dash Avatars, the 10 avatars come to this planet to restore Dharma on this planet. And so Mahavishnu took birth as all these avatars, and eventually, like, it's the same energy. It's the same person behind all of them, right? So, it, like, Ram, Krishna, it's the same energy, but takes birth in different form. That's it. So
then I guess what's would be tripping me up, like, how do we know that the person who is alive today is that same energy, is Shiv, this holy god that exists beyond and is the text that we all are pointing to.
Right. So I want to clarify. I never met Babaji physically. I met Babaji in the astral layer. So I, you know, was on my meditation journey, staying very true, devoted to my practice, and Babaji came to me in the astral layer and communicated to me there. So it wasn't like...
What do you mean by astral layer?
Astral layer. When you go inside deep meditation, right? And you're able to physically see things and not again, here we go, physically. No, but you're able to see beyond just your open eyes type of thing. So I think one of the meditations in the Yagoda Satsanga Society or the SRF is you can see a spiritual inner eye in one of the meditations, right?
Yeah.
Are you seeing it with your eyes open? Where are you seeing that? And what layer are you seeing that?
Like, where is that light coming from?
Yeah, exactly. So when you do that meditation and you can see that spiritual eye and your eyes are closed, what layer are you in? Right? When you have a dream at night, where are you seeing these dreams? Your eyes are closed the entirety of the night. What layer are you seeing all of these things play out in?
And that's what we're calling the astral.
Astral. That's the astral. Astral layer. Yes.
And that's even would tie into when people talk about like astral projection or lucid. I guess lucid dreaming might be a bit different.
I don't have much experience with all of that.
Okay.
But I could imagine that it would be similar to that. Yes.
So I guess like in this context, to me, astral projection is being able to project your consciousness then through the astral and being able to see a different physical place on Earth at this time.
Okay. Yeah. That's not what my experience with Babaji was. It was more
Let's get back then to what you know.
Yeah. No, that's beyond
we'll
my
save that for an astral projector.
Yeah.
Well, I've had one on the show before, and so that's where, like, I think I'm just, like, connecting the dots of, like, maybe they're just, like, using the astral as a bridge, like, out of the physical back into the physical.
Right.
That's speculation, but we can get back to Babaji.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're in a deep meditation. Did you say anything to, like, invoke this? Was this something that just naturally happened?
So I can get into the story of how it happened. Do you want me to tell the story?
Let's do it.
All right. So I definitely want to preface it with my background. I grew up in the Western world, grew up in the United States, northeastern part, New England. Shout out to anybody in New England. And I knew from a very young age that I saw the world differently than everybody else around me. I think I was probably in kindergarten when I realized, like, I'm not as interested in everything around me as everybody else seems. I want to know more about the place we are, who I am, what's going on. And this is like thoughts of a 5-year-old or 6-year-old child, which is absolutely, you know, when I look back, it's very bizarre.
Yeah,
so,
5-year-olds, I think I was interested with like Thomas the Tank Engine or something.
Right. So that's a great point, because I'd see kids who were interested in Thomas the Tank Engine. I'm like, what's the interest there? I don't see anything there. I don't understand why people love this stuff so much. It was so bizarre to me. And so naturally I had like questions as a child, which was not, again, when I look at my peers and I try to explain my experience to my peers, maybe I didn't do it in the first grade, but like as you go on in life, you're like, why is my experience different than yours? What's going on here?
Hey, real quick, pull your mic just a little bit further away.
Just
a little bit. And sometimes it helps if it's like shifted so you can like speak off to the side of it.
Like that?
Like kind of like, so you see how you're speaking straight into it versus,
Angle.
Angle it a little bit.
Let me get this.
You can shift it back the other way, too.
I don't know which side it is. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, there you go. If you spin it. Yeah. So that might not do the spinning. You might just have to physically spin it a little bit.
I got you.
Yeah.
Is that good?
Yeah, then now you have to tighten it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good?
So it's kind of more, see if I can, like that.
Oh,
yeah.
I got you.
So that way you're speaking like across it as opposed to directly into it.
Okay.
Like, see how it's like not dead on?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Better?
Yeah, then just... Yeah.
Pull it back in.
And then move it right there. There you go. He cool with that?
Yeah. All right, cool.
So we're... apologies for that.
Yeah, but you're
in the middle of realizing that Thomas the Tank Engine isn't the coolest thing in the world.
So essentially, you know, as you go up, going through school, whatnot, I just remember my dad. I would have these drives to school with my dad in the morning, and he would be explaining business stuff to me. And I kind of got a sense for like, wow, like the world works in a funny way. Something just doesn't seem right here. Like how corrupt everything seemed in the way the world was. And I finally got to high school and I was like, that was like the most eye-opening thing for me was when I got to high school, I'm like, wow, I don't really fit in with people. Like I can fit in. I can play the part. I can act the role. But that's when people really start to come into their personalities and like start to figure out who they are. Is that that because middle school for me was just fun. There was no really like fears or, I mean, a little bit of middle school anxiety, whatever. But I remember high school, I really started to like get some anxiety. I'm like, wow, like the people around me in my school, it just doesn't seem like I belong here. Need mind you, I went to Catholic schools my whole life. My parents never really forced religion on me, but I just went to Catholic schools. And so I knew all about, you know, Catholicism.
I'm always curious. Whenever people go to Catholic school, I'm always interested. Did you ever read the Bible? Did they ever like have a Bible for you to read?
Well, we had masses in school and like, yeah, we'd go through the Bible sometime, but it wasn't like we had religion class. It was just like, you know, you'd had a religion textbook just like any other subject and you'd study about, you know, Christianity or
Catholic
stuff.
But like what? Like the history of it or like?
Like learning the vocabulary, which was kind of the boring side of things. I always loved the stories.
Okay.
Like if we stuck to the Bible and just like read the stories of Jesus, that would have been cool by me.
Yeah.
But when they're like, you know, learn about the Pope and all this stuff, I'm like, I didn't really care. Like the like vocabulary Eucharist and like.
You would think you would spend that time learning about Jesus or
what
he did.
No. Catholic Church is very much focused on continuing their Catholic ways.
Okay.
So I'm more of a believer in Jesus than anything else. I don't believe in like any specific religion. I believe in Jesus the same way I believe in Buddha, the same way I believe in Krishna. So that's just my mindset towards things. But it was cool to have that experience of like, getting a deep knowledge on Jesus growing up. And I never grew attached to the whole, you know, you got to go to church every Sunday. I'm a sinner if I don't type of thing. So I never really.
It's pretty powerful too.
Yeah. Well, I never felt that way because you know why? It was, and I would see my religion teachers. That's how you base, you know, your morals off of. You don't base it off of what you're being taught. You base it off of who's teaching it when you're that age. So I look at my teacher and I'm like, you definitely don't follow all of this. Like everything you're teaching me from this, like this textbook sheet, like, I'm like, you definitely don't follow all this. So I'm like, why should I?
Yeah.
There's no point in that. So yeah.
Yeah. It's like the idea of, you know, who it's like, pay attention to who you're getting the advice from. Cause it's like, do you really want that advice?
Yeah.
Is that the advice that you really want and need at this time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's powerful stuff, dude.
Yeah. So, yeah. But beyond that, so I had that upbringing. And so I just remember wanting answers. I finally had this point in my life where I'm like, all right, I decided I don't want to be an outcast. I want to fit in. I think a lot of people have that choice in life where they're like, well, do I continue down my unique path where I'm just not fitting in with anyone? Or do I just succumb and, you know, do what everybody else is doing? And that's what I did in high school. My last 2 years, I'm just like, I'm just going to fit in, try to do what all the cool kids do and see what happens. And, you know, that led to a whole, you know, partying, all this stuff. And everybody says it's so normal, you know, just go and party. It's what every teenager does, blah, blah, blah. And deep down, I'm like, I just feel like I'm becoming more and more disconnected with who I am. And I'm just becoming more and more unhappy with what's going on. And so came time for college. I really tried to fit in again, do the thing for another year or half a year. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I just hit my breaking point. I'm like, I am so done with everybody telling me what I'm doing is normal, with what everybody saying this is what, you know, people your age do. It's like, no, I'm done. I want answers. I'm done with the anxiety. I'm done with the depression. I want answers to life. I have these burning questions inside me. Something's got to give.
Do you remember like what those questions were?
Yeah. What's the point of all this? What am I doing here? Why are we here? Like, so everybody around me, is when we were in high school, I think it was my junior year, everybody's getting ready to apply for colleges. They're like, oh yeah, I'm going to go to college and I'm going to do this. And I'm like, dude, you know what you want to do for the rest of your life?
40
really?
Years.
Like, how are you so sure about all of this? And I was so confused. I didn't even want to apply to go to college. I didn't want to go to college at all. I eventually dropped out, but the point was, I didn't understand how everybody was so certain around me. I was so uncertain. I didn't know. I didn't have answers. And so, lo and behold, we get to college. All of those kids change their majors like 3 or 4 times. You know, all the ones that were so certain. But
oh, that's got to be interesting too. Because that's also another thing that I've always kind of had like a weird trip on is like certainty. Like, how do you know?
It's
like, especially whenever going back to your religious teachers, it's like, okay, you're not following this, so why should I be listening to it?
Right.
Like getting that mixed signal. It's like, oh, like you don't actually know. You're not even listening to what you're teaching. It's like, so you say you know what you want to do, but now a year down the road, 5 months, you're like, let's do something else. Do you feel like that like warped or had any like consequences maybe at the time on you knowing, like knowing what the energy of knowing is?
So you're saying when I was in high school?
Yeah, like being surrounded with people who quote unquote know.
So the only thing I knew at that time is that I knew I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Okay.
That was it. And that's the only thing I knew. I knew I was uncertain. And what bothered me so much wasn't so much my uncertainty. It was everybody else's certainty. But that's the world we live in.
Interesting.
Everybody pretends like, I realized, I came after I hit that breaking point at 19 and I did some soul searching. I realized nobody knows anything. They pretend, they'll put on this facade. They'll say, yeah, I know for sure. This is what I want to do. But then you have a real conversation with them and you look at their life and they don't know what they're doing. Nobody knows what they're doing at the end of the day. So, I mean, very few souls are very confident and set, yes, this is my life's purpose without a without any doubt beyond it. So
it's interesting that for me, at least, that tends to pop up in different fields, like podcasting, like example, like being podcasting. Like I know I'm supposed to be podcasting because I constantly like am. It's almost like a questioning. I'm like checking in with, you know, higher powers. Like, am I supposed to be podcasting? It's like, yes. It's like, okay, cool. I'll just keep doing that. Versus if it's like a relationship, like sometimes it's like, okay, where is this a person supposed to fall? Like, I don't always exactly know right away. It's like, is this a friend? Is this a romantic partner? Like sometimes there isn't that direct knowing, but it's interesting how I feel like, at least in my life, it appears in certain realms. Like, okay, I know here or I know there, but other times it's like, maybe we're not supposed to know yet in this situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's life's a process.
Yeah.
And unfolding. So naturally, sometimes you'll go into a situation, you're not going to know the guaranteed outcome right away. But over time, you come to know somebody's character or whatever. You're like, okay, well, maybe I am supposed to hang out with them more. So
wouldn't it be fun if we just always knew?
Yeah. Well, there's a balance, because as time goes on and you become more self-aware, and you grow into your inner eye, you open your inner eye more, you do come to know certain things. And there's a large degree of certainty that enters your life that wasn't there before, and a large degree of confidence that enters your life that perhaps wasn't there before. So I appreciate having that in my life now, definitely, versus the days where I was just unsure of everything. So
I'm sure a lot of that confidence to get us back on track has to do with your interaction with Babaji.
Yeah. So again, I had that breaking point at 19. I'm like, okay, I need to find some, I need answers. I need real answers, because I'm not happy in life. I want to be happy. I don't want to go down this route of just working the rest of my life and getting a house and having kids and just being married. Which, you know, maybe that will happen at some point, but that's not like, I want something more out of life.
You don't want like the program of it.
Exactly.
It wants to be like that deep knowing.
It's like, I already, like, okay, I can see this path. It's so clear to me. All right. Everybody does it. Or most people go down that road. I'm like, is there any other path I can take? Is there any other way? And so started reading all these books, because the school wasn't teaching me anything I wanted to know. Like, and I went on this journey where I just completely stopped partying, stopped hanging out with all my friends, just went full like hermit mode Is that what a hermit
yeah,
is?
Hermit
Right,
mode.
yeah.
Yeah.
And I stayed in every weekend. Still, I did, I think, college online or something. And because my parents were like, you have to go to college. And so,
of course.
Yeah. And so I'm just reading books every weekend, spiritual books.
Do you never remember which ones?
Oh, yeah, dude. I remember it was, it started with Osho, I think. It's called Freedom, the book called Freedom. And that really blew my mind. It was deep to a level that I've never gone before. And it kind of just like explains societal programming. And, you know, some people can read that book and think nothing the difference, right?
Okay.
But for me, it just spoke to me. It spoke to my experiences in life. It spoke to everything that I had thought, you know? And so it was kind of like a soul awareness thing. And so I started reading Osho, and then I started reading some Eckhart Tolle, or maybe Eckhart Tolle came first. I forget, The Power of Now and Presence and Awareness. And then I read Inner Engineering by Sadhguru, which is my first introduction to the mystical arts of like energy work and sacred geometry, and just kind of like a lot of Eastern philosophy there, and the Vedic sciences, if you will, or just the sciences there. And so then I found my way eventually. I think I saw on TV, and I started practicing meditation. I'm probably like 21, 22 at this point. I had started practicing meditation, and I saw Yogananda's documentary, which was probably on Netflix at the time, I think. And I watched it randomly. And this was before I was really heavy into the spiritual side of things. I had just been reading. So it was more like intellectual stuff. And then I watched this, and I was kind of just blown away. It was just like, wow, this experience was pretty cool. And so
What about it like blew you away?
You know, I think it's more so how his disciples and the people around him spoke about him. I think that says a lot about it. Told me a lot about his character and
okay.
who he was, and just, there was this one scene where it was like, he was just so sure of himself, you know, the guidance he had. And like, so Yogananda was saying to one of his disciples or whatever, devotees, I forget, was speaking about how he's like, you know, do I have to give up drugs and partying and blah, blah, blah? And Yogananda's like, listen, I'm not going to tell you to give up anything, he says, but I can't guarantee that if you keep coming here, you're not going to want to give those things up on your own. So if you keep coming and practicing these meditations, naturally you're just going to lose interest in those things. And that had been my experience. So just like hearing his wisdom and like his insights, like the way he spoke, and it was just beautiful to me. I loved every second of it. And believe it or not, it was probably like another year that went by before I actually read, or maybe it was a year, I forget. But then I read the autobiography of a yogi. And that is when things really changed for me. Like big time changed. I know, I think you've read the book as well,
yeah.
Right? And so that was really my best introduction into the guru-disciple relationship. And I had read about the guru-disciple relationship before in multiple other books. But that was more of like the experience I was looking for. I wanted a guru. I wanted to meet my guru. I wanted to learn under and at the feet of my guru. That's one of my biggest longings. So when I read about Yogananda's experience with his gurus, it was like, yep, my soul immediately knew, my inner eye, everything tingled. I'm like, this is for me. And so I started doing all this research. How do I find my guru? How do I find my guru? And so I ended up going to the SRF Boston location, one of the temples that they had there. And I had a hard time finding the place. I'm like, what's going on? Like, it was a winter night. It was kind of snowing outside. I'm like struggling to find this place. I actually showed up to the wrong address and walked in someone's house because their door was open. And I'm like calling up the stairs like, hello. I'm like, this can't be the right spot. So I left. But then I persevered and eventually found the temple that night, and I walked in, and it was this eerie feeling. I'm like, whoa, like the energy here is totally different. And so,
in like a good way or bad way?
It in a new way. It was just an experience I had never had before, where the whole space was empowered by the lineage of gurus, and so many people go there to worship those gurus. So their energy was just emanating there. So it's a very mystical feeling. And I was used to just going to church, and when you're used to going to church, you don't really feel that same. It's a different energy when you walk into a church versus a temple with the SRF gurus. It's just a different energy I had never experienced. So, but I felt it the second I walked in the door. I was like, whoa, this place is definitely different. There's something different about this place. And so I was greeted. I was all excited, like new experience, a little nervous. And so they did this silent meditation in the basement, and they had the gurus just lined up, like on the shrine, if you will.
Pictures of them.
Pictures of the gurus, yeah. And I was going through all the pictures, and I'm like, okay, I know Babaji, I know Yogananda, I know Sri Yukteswar, I know Lahiri Mahasaya, and Jesus, of course, I know, because I had read the book, and like they had briefly gone over it. And then there's this picture of this one person that looks like a woman or something. I don't know. I couldn't really tell. And I'm looking at this picture, and I couldn't stop looking at this picture. It's this picture of this guru, and I'm not really sure like if it's a woman or a man or what it is, but I'm just looking. And so I decide the entire meditation to just look at this picture. Turns out it was Krishna, which at the time I wasn't really aware of Krishna, but that was kind of a side note. When I found that temple, a woman that night suggested that I do the SRF take-home lessons. And I'm like, oh, interesting. Like, what are the SRF take-home lessons? And she explained it to me. And she was kind of like a spiritual guide for me, because she had this total calming demeanor. You know how I said my religion teacher wasn't about what she was telling me?
Yeah.
This woman was about what she was telling me. Like,
you just knew.
Oh,
you could
yeah.
feel it.
She was so calm. Very like her. I don't know if much about auras, but you can tell when somebody's energy is all over the place versus when somebody's energy is just very settled and focused and just loving. And
yeah, the best example I have, if anyone wants to go back and listen to another podcast, it's Asha Naya Swami. She, I don't remember who she studied under, but she studied under like one of Paramahansa's direct gurus.
Oh, really?
I'm trying to remember. It was like he started Ananda. The Ananda Society.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about him.
I don't remember his name, though.
No, I don't either.
Let me see. Who started Ananda? Still in the market for a Google searcher, if anyone out there listening wants to help
Jamie,
me out.
Jamie, are you free?
Yeah, where's Jamie? I need my own Jamie. That's like at the top of my list, but still haven't found one. So, guys, hook me up with a Jamie. Odyssey number 89. Asha Naya Swami. Oh, no. I lied. Let me find it. When was Asha? Is she that long ago? 88. Asha Naya Swami. Odyssey number 88, if anyone's interesting. Yeah, so she studied under a guy who knew Paramahansa. And so she was like once removed, if you will.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though. Her story, she was 19 as well whenever she met her guru. And like she just knew. She was like, oh, this is the guy. But even just sitting with her, like her voice, just her demeanor is everything that you're discussing right here. It was just so calm, so present, so just loving.
Yeah. So that's what this woman was to me.
Okay.
And when she suggested, you know, take these lessons, I'm like, yes, because I want what you have. You have this demeanor of peace, and I'm going to take your advice. So I went home, I researched. It's probably a day of research. I'm like, yeah, I'm buying these lessons. And so that was my start of the SRF lessons. And those that I loved every second of reading them. I loved reading them. I loved the practices. I loved every second of it, because keep in mind, I had given up, like not given up. I had stopped hanging out with all my friends, stopped partying, I used to go to the gym all the time. I stopped going to the gym And I just kind of stopped everything. And I wanted answers because when you have a lot around you, it's hard to know who you are. You know, if you remove everything around you and you kind of just spend time by yourself, you get to know who you are. And that's what I needed. I needed some time alone. So every weekend, I just go lock myself in my room and just study and just read books and learn, read the lessons. And every day I was doing the meditations. It worked up to the point where I was doing an hour and a half in the morning and an hour at night consistently. And then usually once a week, I tried to do a really long meditation for like 3 hours. Every week wasn't 3 hours. 3 hours was probably my longest, but on like a Sunday, I try to do like a 3 hour meditation to just see, you know, can I stay in this place with my eyes closed? And, you know, yeah. So it was a challenge.
3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the longest one I ever did was 3 hours. And, you know, looking back, that's my reaction. 3 hours. That's crazy. Like that's insane. I don't do that now, but it gave me the perspective I needed. I needed to get to know myself. What do I care about? What do I not care about? What do I want to know about? What do I not want to know about? And what I realized is I want truth in my life. I want enlightenment. I want to find my guru. And so the best way I knew how to do all three of those things was to just meditate as much as I could and read these lessons and stay true to the lineage of gurus and just be devoted, extremely devoted with everything that I could give at the time. And that's what I did. And, you know, I still didn't know what I was supposed to do with my life on the external world, like in the physical world. Like I was working on this health and wellness application. I thought that's what my purpose was. My friend of mine was like, hey, like,
as in like a cell phone app kind of
thing?
Yeah,
cell phone app. Yeah. And so
you said application. And I think,
So
you're applying for health and wellness.
So, an app like you find in the app store. And so, I was working on it with a friend, but I told him, I'm like, listen, meditation comes before all of this for me. Like my meditation is the most important thing in my life, but I will work on this app with everything I have other than, you know, as long as it doesn't interfere with my meditations.
Yeah.
And so I think one night I just kind of hit another breaking point where I was just like, when you're on the path of like on this path, you want a degree of certainty. You want answers. Like you want to know, am I doing the right thing? And it's hard to know when you're on your own. It's hard to know when, you know, you don't have Sri Yukteswar there with you saying, yeah, this is the right choice. Or Yogananda saying, appearing astrally right in front of you, or like materializing physically in front of you saying, yeah, you're doing good. And so one night I was just having a tough night. Like I was about to sit for meditation. I'm like, am I really going to sit for another meditation? I've done this every single day for the past, you know, year plus and or more than that. And I'm just like, you know, what's different today? Am I even doing the right thing? Like everybody around me is going on to get jobs and, you know, going to get married. They all have relationships and I'm doing nothing. So I had this moment of weakness and doubt. And then I just kind of shook it. I'm like, you know what?
Well, real quick, let's jump into that just before we get further, because this is kind of what's tripped me up. And this goes back to that story we were talking about where, okay, hold on to that thought. But the story is, and I have to repeat it just so people know. Which is like God called forth, you know, one of his, let's say avatars and sent them down to earth and said, hey, your mission is to find people that are truly devoted to me and bring them back to me. And so this avatar said, okay, he goes down on earth, he materializes, and he comes across a yogi who's meditating in the woods. And so the avatar's thinking to himself, oh, well, surely this is a guy worthy of God. So he goes up to the yogi, he talked to him. The yogi starts saying how he's been doing all the right things. He's been meditating for the last 80 years. He's been doing everything right. And so the avatar's like, okay, this is like probably a guy to bring back to the God. He keeps going on his journey. And he comes across a guy who's like a drunk or somebody who's just like not having the best time in life. The story I heard is that he's trying to put a piece of wood in the ground for like fencing and just can't get it to go. And so he's like kind of I don't want to say cursing God, but like in the energy of like, God, what's going on? Why won't you help me out? Da 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 da. And the avatar kind of like observes this and he's like, okay, this guy probably isn't the one. And so the avatar then returns to God and is like, hey, so in my mission, I came across these two people. The first one was this yogi in the woods. And God's kind of like, oh, I don't really know who that is. Like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then he tells him about the drunkard and he's like, oh yeah, I know all about him. And the avatar is just like, what do you mean you know about him, but not the yogi? And he's like, all right, here, I'll give you a test so that you understand. He goes, go up to the yogi, go up to both of them and tell them that I am currently busy fitting elephants through the pinhole of a needle and tell them that once I finish doing that, I'll come to them. And the avatar is kind of confused. So he goes back down and he tells the yogi, he's like, yeah, God's currently busy trying to push elephants through the pin of a needle or the hole of a needle. And the yogi gets all upset. He's like, this is bullshit. I've wasted 80 years of my life. This is so ridiculous. I'm never doing this again. And storms off in a rage. And the avatar's like, whoa, like that was crazy. I didn't expect that to happen. He goes to the drunk guy and tells him the same thing. And the drunk guy just elates with joy. He's like, God can do anything. He created all of this. So he's going to be here in an instant. And so then they just instantly burst out in this joyous rage, if you will, and just start dancing and with love and compassion. And the next thing you know, God joins them in the dance. And so to bring this back to like, you know, this energy that we're talking about where you're like having this, it's almost questioning, but it's like this energy of, it's like so much compassion that you are like, dude, I'm doing it. Like, I know this is the path. I know I'm on it, but like, where are you? Like almost like a fulfill your side of the bargain, like lovingly demanding the presence of it. And so, you know, it's almost not doubt. It also reminds me of the story of Job in the thing. We don't have to go through a whole nother story. If people want to listen to that, they can check that out. But it's like, I'm committed to you. I'm devoted. I'm spending all of this time doing it. And I know that I'm on my path. Like, where are you? Like, show on your side of the bargain. So it's almost not doubt, but it's like this, loving, the best I've heard Paramahansa says, it's like lovingly demanding. It's like lovingly demanding that God comes in on, or bliss comes in on their side of the thing. Like, hey, I'm doing it. Like,
right.
Where am I coming up short?
Right. So just to give, I love that story, by the way. Probably whenever I hear a story like that, it's just instant, like just sad, like happiness on the inside, because it's so true. And what most people don't realize is how important bhakti is, or just like loving devotion is. So when I was doing all these practices, I won't lie, obviously I wanted an outcome. Like, I wanted to see my guru. I wanted the gurus to come to me. I wanted to see God. But I was fully committed to going my whole life before that happened. I was fully committed in my mind saying, I will go my entire life doing this if that's what it takes. I was in that, like, whether or not I would have done it or not, I don't know. But in those years, that was my mindset. I'm like, I will do this as long as it takes in order to find God, because I wanted that more than anything. I wanted answers. And so, you know, that one night of doubt I had was almost like I could have become that 80-year-old yogi that night and just given up. I could have been that guy practicing, you know, for 80 years and just being like, you know what, I'm done. You're not coming to me. This is it. But no, I feel like you have to be a mix of the drunkard and the yogi. You have to do your practices, but you also have to do them lovingly and devotingly and not expecting anything in return, type of thing. And so as much as you want that return, you can't let that part of your mind win, because God's watching everything at every moment, right? Nature's watching you. She knows when to guide you, when not to guide you, where to put you, where not to put you. And so, thankfully, that night I overcame those thoughts and I actually went out into nature. I went out into, it was a cold winter night, and I'm just like, it's a full moon. I'm like, I'm just going to stare at this moon until something happens. right? And then somehow my eyes end up closed. And it's funny because I was trying to visualize Babaji's face on the moon. Whoa. At first. Like, Babaji was my choice that night of guru to pray to. And so then I found my eyes closed, and that's when he came to me. Just like that. And I had been praying for a purpose in life. I had been longing for some meaning because I could do the meditations. That I can do very well. I can enjoy meditation far beyond most people around me because closing your eyes is easy. It's going about daily life in the physical world that's the really hard part. So I wanted something to do in that physical world. I wanted to do good. And so that's when he spoke to me and he said, son, you know, I have a plan for you. I've heard your plans. I've heard your prayers, and you know, you have a mission. There's a purpose for you. And that's when he explained the social media app and so on and so forth. And I connected with him more than just that night, but essentially he guided me to India. And he said that, you know, I was to go to India and meet with this person who I'd never met before in real life. So just to give a little context, he had told me I was going to create this social media app. I'm like, okay, I don't really know how I'm going to do this. He's like, don't worry. Everything's going to happen. Everything's going to come together. You're with me now. I'm guiding you. You're like, pretty much let your fears and your uncertainties melt away. And obviously that's a huge relief for me because everything I had been longing for at that point was pretty much answered. That's all I really wanted. And I did want enlightenment as well. If he had given me eternal bliss in that moment, I wouldn't have been upset. But in that moment, him giving me a purpose and answering my prayers, that was eternal bliss to me. That seriously was just such a relief. And so I have this new vigor now. I'm going about life. I'm like, okay, we're doing this health and wellness platform. It's going to turn into a social media platform. I was already working on this app, and ironically, like, my inner eye knew that I was going to be doing something with an app. And so it's just going to be a social media. I'm like, all right, let's do this. And so I have this new vigor. I'm still doing my meditations. And I think I worked my butt off for like a year trying to get this app off the ground. I'm not a software engineer. I'm not a computer developer. Like, I don't know anything computer science. I took a class or two in high school, but I wasn't the developer. I was just I understood the business of apps. I understood how it worked. I had researched it enough. And I knew what a good interface looked like, a good user experience, but we needed to find someone to develop this application. And trying to find that developer or how to develop it was pretty much the biggest challenge I had ever faced at that point, aside from my meditation and prayer. And so we struggled on and off. My buddy and I, who were working together on this, we struggled on and off for a year, maybe more. And that's when I finally was like, all right, you know, Babaji, what's the deal here? Like,
so this is a year after you saw him?
About a year. Yeah. Okay. Somewhere around that timeline. And so it was sometime later. I can't give exact timelines, but it was sometime after that. It felt like it was probably at least a year. And I'm like, what's the word here? Like, something's got to give, because you told me, you gave me this task. You said everything was going to line up, but things don't seem to be lining up. And so the communication he gave me was, you have to go to India. So I connected again with him in the astral layer. He said, it's time, you have to go to India. And in my mind, since like many years prior to that, I had wanted to go to India desperately. Mm-hmm. But I told myself, I can't go to India until I finish the app. I got to finish the app before I go to India. But ironically, now he's telling me the only way to finish the app is if you go to India. And so it's just this crazy full circle of events. And so I'm like, okay. And so I'm scrolling social media one day before I'm going to leave for India, and before I like have any set plans on when I'm exactly going to India. And I come across this man, and it's almost like I instantly recognized him. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, who is this person? Like, I feel like I know that, not I feel like I know this person. I do know this person. And it's Krishna. That's all that came to my mind. I looked at this photo of this man. I'm like, this is Krishna. So instantly I made a connection. And so And again, my experience of Krishna at this point is very minimal. It's whatever the SRF, YSS talks about Krishna, which is very minimal.
Yeah, they really don't.
Extremely minimal. And then again, I told that little story earlier on in this story about how I sat down and looked at Krishna that one time, that my first night in the SRF temple, and just stared at that picture of Krishna. That was my only other experience with Krishna. That's all I really knew about him. But from that, just staring at that photo and having the little SRF altar in my home, I was able to recognize that this man's Krishna. And so I connected with him, spoke with him on the phone, and I'm explaining to him how I'm creating this application and, you know, how it's going to help change the world. It's going to be health and wellness and based social media. And I'm like, if people are eating right and they do this, then they're going to reach enlightenment. The world's going to be a happier, better place. He's like, yes, dear. He says, but love is the ultimate. And I'm like, whoa, okay. And then I continued on. I'm explaining, I'm like, yeah, love's the ultimate. But, you know, if we get people eating right, then they can experience this and their life will change, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yes, dear, but love is the ultimate. Love is the ultimate. And then I'm like, okay, I really got to listen to what he's saying, because I got this, again, this chilling feeling like my inner eye was opening to what he was saying. Like my inner guidance was there for it. And he's just saying, love is the ultimate. And so I just started listening, and I realized in that moment when he said it for like the second or third time that love is the ultimate, I'm like, there's a deep wisdom in this man that is so far beyond what I know. And I just need to stop talking and listen. And I remember I was on the phone, I put it on speaker, and I bowed to the phone in that moment. And because I'm communicating with him through WhatsApp, and he's in India. Of course, of all places, this man's in India, where Babaji told me I was supposed to be going. Right. And I connected with this random person on the internet, just randomly scrolling through the internet.
Looking back, it doesn't seem so random.
Yeah, no, definitely not. It's all divine guidance, but in the moment, it's just, yeah, it happens, yeah, one step you're after, like, the other. You're like, what's going on? And so I had that conversation with him. He says, well, whenever you come to India, come see me. And I said, okay. And so I connected with Babaji again. He said, or maybe it was before I left that I connected with Babaji again. Either way, at some point I connect with Babaji again. I've already got my tickets now. I'm ready to go to India.
So real quick, before you get to India, when you're saying you're connecting with Babaji, are you at a point now where you can just drop into meditation and instantly talk to him, or what's happening here?
With any great guru, they choose when they want to speak to you. So I can go and knock at the door, but the only time they'll answer is when they know they need to answer. But I'm internally at a point, even with the physical guru, you can go and speak to a guru, your guru physically, if they're embodied. They will not necessarily answer your questions. They know when to answer and when not to answer. And they'll even take you through a loop. They'll just say the same thing over and over again to you.
Like, love is the ultimate.
But that's a different type of loop. But if they know you're asking questions you already know the answers to, and that you just haven't accepted that answer in your own self, they'll just loop you around and not really give you a solid answer.
Okay.
They'll just loop you around because they know, like, a true guru knows you need to figure this out for yourself. They're not going to be like, oh, here's the answer on a silver platter. No, you got to work for that answer. And internally,
and trust yourself and understand that you know it.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it's not empowerment.
Yes. A true guru guides you to your own inner guru all the time. They're always redirecting you in every single, like, whenever they get the chance to redirect you to your own internal guru, they do it. And that's how you know it's a true guru. If someone is like, you can't get anything done without me, that's not a true guru.
Right.
That's not a real guru.
Right.
So
it's a energy vampire.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. If they're saying in this moment you need me, that's different. But if they're saying you can't get anything done ever without me, you need to come to me for every single little thing, to me, that's not
toxic.
A true guru. Yeah.
That's toxic.
Yeah. And so that's how I would connect with Babaji. I'd sit, I would do my normal meditations, and sometimes I wouldn't even be asking to see him. Sometimes I'd just be doing my meditations, and he would come in and begin communicating with me. And so,
now, do you always see him, or is it sometimes just his voice?
Sometimes it's just the voice. That first time astrally, I completely saw him fully. He revealed himself. But yeah, sometimes it's just a voice. It's his guidance. And he doesn't always have to come in the same form. He can come in whatever forms. People will see his photo on the internet and be like, that's Babaji. You know, I told this story on my YouTube channel of how Babaji and my guru were meeting in the physical layer. Babaji took form, but he took form in an old man's body, or in a different man's body, not in his normal, what people depict him as, body. And so he's an immortal, so he materialized into, you know, whatever body he wanted to, right? And so him and my guru are having a physical meeting, and a reporter comes along, and he knew my guru, the reporter, like the news reporter knew my guru, and he was just like, you know, who's your friend here, pretty much. He's like, oh, this is just my friend so-and-so. And this man, this news reporter, met Babaji, not knowing it was Babaji.
But didn't even know.
Didn't even know. So you could have met Babaji in your life and just not know. That, I mean, how many times that song, you know, what if God was one of us, just a stranger on a bus, you know? How many times have you gone out into the world and seen God and not even known?
Yeah.
So when...
It reminds me of, there's a quote that this reminds me of. I read it in one of the SRF lessons, which was, a pickpocketer could meet an enlightened master and he would only see pockets.
Precisely. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the only reason rationally, if I'm to think about why I'm able to communicate, was just because of my devotion and my practice. And that's not like saying I'm better than anybody else. Anybody can do what I've done. Anybody can. It just takes the right mindset. It takes the right
effort.
Karmas, too. Your karmas play a huge role in all of this. And so...
I'll break that down.
I mean, there's no way all the spiritual work that I've done in this life is... I mean, there's no way the accomplishments that I've attained to in this life is just a result of this life alone. When I saw my guru for the first time through that picture, who technically was a stranger, I recognized him immediately.
Right.
And for me to recognize him immediately, it means I've done so many previous lives of work and so many karmas that I've accumulated of just doing not just good, but like doing according to what my guru guided me to do. I didn't just come into this life thinking, oh, I want to meet my guru randomly. No, it's a previous life experience. I knew that I wanted this because of my previous life experiences. So I'd been with my guru and I talked to him about this many lifetimes, millions and millions of lifetimes prior to this one.
Jeez, there's that many?
Oh, of course.
You think so? You know so. Eternal. It sounds like you know so.
Life's eternal. Energy is not created nor destroyed, right?
Millions.
But think about the timeline of existence.
I mean, according to our current understanding, right, the Big Bang was, according to modern science, it was like 15 trillion years, billion years ago. But I think like India states it, or the Bhagavad, the Vedas say that it's like hundreds of trillions of years ago.
Yeah. So I'm my knowledge on the Big Bang is not so great. Is that Big Bang the entire cosmos, or is it just our
It's the entire universe.
Okay. Yeah. So my knowledge is not perfect there. But either way, the universe is so old.
But what's interesting about this is that it's not going to be perfect. I'm going to use rough estimates here, guys. So don't, maybe, wait.
And time's relative, by the way. So our time passing in this universe is completely different than time passing in, let's say, another universe. So a million years and a million lifetimes here could be one day in another universe.
Well, what also gets trippy about this is 1 year is measured based off of how long the Earth takes to go around the sun.
Right.
So, like, we're attaching, and this is where it gets really difficult, is we're attaching time to space. Like, we're saying, like, okay, we're measuring time against space.
Yeah.
Which really isn't even it doesn't even do justice to the whole phenomena that we're experiencing. So you can argue that. What can you argue? You can argue a bunch of stuff, I'm sure. I'm not even going to...
Let's just argue.
Yeah. I want to look up Big Bang gets becomes older or something like that. I need a Jamie. Guys, shout out to someone who wants to become a Jamie in Pittsburgh, PA. The universe is 2 times older than we initially thought. This is, July 16th, 2023. So before I read this, what's interesting is that, so I think it was like 13 billion years old, and then is what like modern Western science thought it was.
Way older than that.
Well, so
way older.
I read something in the Vedas where they were trying to describe the age of it, and like they had to start making up new words for it because like we have trillion, quadrillion, but then they were even going bigger. So it's like something to the magnitude of trillion, trillion years old. And I was like, this is kind of insane.
Well, at that point, it just, there's no beginning and no end.
Right?
There is no beginning and no end.
It's so impossible for our mind to comprehend.
There's only the present moment. That's it. There's only, because everything's relative. Everything. Yeah. It's all relative. So there's no way we can attach a number. But if we were to specifically, I meant specifically on this planet, by the way. Millions of years with my guru on this planet.
Okay.
From this planet, not from...
Millions of lifetimes on Earth.
Maybe not lifetimes, but years at least. I don't know. The way he described it to me, I think he said millions of years on this planet. But that's just this planet. And that's not including other universes I've been with them, other planets, other solar system, other galaxies.
Jeez.
So,
all right,
Yeah.
No, we can sit on this for a little bit. Because this brings in another... Well, here, real quick, I want to just say the article that I'm reading, universe is 2 times older than we initially thought. Big Bang occurred. Wow, that's hilarious. They say this with so much certainty. Big Bang occurred 26.7 billion years ago.
Yeah.
That's hilarious that we find out it's 2 times years older. And we're like, no. Now we know.
Yeah, no.
Now we know it's
26
billion years.
That's how modern scientists are. They'll say for certainty until some new evidence comes out and they change their mind completely.
Okay, no. Now we're certain.
Yeah.
No. Now we're certain.
Yeah.
But this, okay. So here's going to get a little trippy. I don't have any scientific evidence for this. I would be interested to hear your thoughts. So our current understanding is that modern humans evolved over the course of like 2 million years, something like that, roughly 2 million years. Now,
that's I feel like that's more accepted in the West, by the way.
Yes.
Because if you look at Vedic knowledge, they speak way beyond that, way beyond that. Like the deep in Hindu cult, the Hindu texts, they don't talk like that. They go far beyond that. So,
I'm interested to hear what you say, but let me.
Yeah.
So again, and this is where, you know, when we were talking earlier, you know, we were talking about like Bhagavad Gita and like a war and how I haven't like really read it. So, and I think a portion of me not reading it is so that this like validates for me that I'm like on the right path. This like understanding and knowing. I feel like that was a weird side tangent there. Let me get back to what I was thinking. So I love going to museums. And one of the ones we have here is like a natural history museum, which has like dinosaurs, prehistoric ages, stuff like that. Now, taking the mindset of, you know, modern science saying, you know, whether it's true or not, modern science saying that it took us 2 million years for our brains to evolve, right? I took that idea and looked at the scope in which dinosaurs walked on Earth. And what they do is they have a plus or minus. So like this dinosaur lived plus or minus like between 300 million and 500 million years ago. So there's a plus or minus of 2 million years where they're not 100% sure. And then where my mind comes in is like, we're just going to act as if there was never any intelligent being, let's say like on the level of humans that existed in the hundreds of millions of years that dinosaurs were on Earth. Like to me, I was like, okay, there had to have been some sort of like, let's say Homo sapien or, but see, this then gets into the trouble of like, what is intelligence? You know, how do you define intelligence? But like, let's say externally communicating organisms that had to have been on Earth, in my opinion, I mean, I have no physical evidence for this, but to me, I'm like, there had to have been something during the age of the dinosaurs that like would have been at the level of articulation that the level of consciousness, there it is. That's the right word. Level of consciousness that humans are at.
Yeah.
So does the Veda say anything about that?
I mean, I'm not a professional in the Vedas or by any means, but I do know that they date back humanity so far beyond what modern science would. And if you take a look at modern science, it's
Real quick, what's like a ballpark?
I wouldn't be able to tell you because I don't want to misconstrue.
So what should I look up? Veda's beginning of humanity?
I mean, it's millions and millions of years, probably if not billions. I don't know. I don't know.
Go ahead. You're going to start going on to something. I'll cut you off if I can find something on this.
So, yeah, no, just I think at this point we know that modern science is not as accurate as we kind of hoped for it to be. And if I think personally that they just don't tell the full truth about the history of this planet. And
you think they know?
Oh, of course. I mean, there's plenty of evidence for them to know. But not everybody knows. But the people in power, the leaders, they know the history of this planet. They absolutely know the history of this planet. And they know that it wasn't 10,000 years ago that we were just roaming as cavemen. They know that for sure.
Yeah.
So.
Sorry, guys. I'm still putting effort in here to search.
What are you trying to find? When the first humans were?
The idea of like when, how old civilization is according to like the Vedas.
Right.
But maybe it's not the Vedas that I should even be looking at.
I think that humanity just came in before that, before what they're saying. And that's enough to know.
Yeah. I guess the actual number isn't too important.
Yeah. Because there's a history. The reason why it's important to know that it's before what they say there is because there's a history here of hidden technologies and hidden sciences. Like people look at, you know, a lot of the Eastern sciences as nonsense, like these texts as nonsense. It's not nonsense. There's actually a deep knowledge there of astrology and all of these things. And it's far, the yogis were far more accurate than these modern scientists are for a lot of regards. But now modern science is finally catching up. Even the SRF talks about how modern science is finally realizing what the yogis said thousands of years ago, by the way.
Yeah.
These aren't like modern yogis saying these things. These are yogis from like 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago saying these things. My timeline could be a little bit off, but it's a while ago that they were saying these things and making these observations. And now modern science is like, oh yeah, the whole universe is vibration. Everything is vibration. It's like, well, yeah, they knew this way long ago. The pyramids are a perfect example.
Yeah.
How they built them, how they were aligned perfectly with, you know, the constellations and so on and so forth. That takes an insane knowledge.
Yeah.
Incredible knowledge to be able to do these things. And we still don't know the full potential and the full, we technically don't know what, you know, these pyramids are and how they work and their true purpose on this planet and why they were built.
Have you ever read Law of One? Have you ever heard of the Law of One?
No.
Oh. This is the end of part one. In part two, Brandon and I get into the details of the Law of One and how exactly it relates to the pyramids. All of this ahead in Odyssey number 092, Brandon Conseil Sal part two, The Hidden Power of the Pyramids and Ancient Energy.